This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 170 of The Bugle, the world's only remaining reliable source of truth. Honestly, you'll just have to trust me on this one. Other sources might claim that's not true, but those sources are unreliable. This is for the week beginning Monday, the 31st of October, 2011. I am Andy Zaltzman. I'm in London, and if you were a prehistoric caveman who used to live on the site, you wouldn't believe what they've done to the place. And in New York City, USA, it's the man who's now been married for 27 days. That is almost three and a half times longer than his fellow actor Dennis Hopper managed in his marriage to Michelle Phillips, who is 50% of the mama's portion of the Mamas and the Papas. So well done, John. You've outlasted Hopper and Phillips.
Yes. Suck it.
I believe that might have been one of the problems. But apparently, she filed for divorce on grounds of unreasonable sexual demands. So the story goes.
You've opened blue, Andy.
Sorry, viewers.
Andy, first things first. What a game last night.
What a game, John.
What a baseball game last night. Bugler's, Texas Rangers played the St. Louis Cardinals last night. Absolutely phenomenal game of baseball. And Andy and I were texting each other during the end of the game, which, you know, it was quite late for me, Andy, because kind of finished nearly one in the morning. But it must have been a f*** of a lot later for you, Andy.
It was late, John. It was very. I was sort of wrapping up for the night at about 2:30 in the morning. I thought I'll just go and check the score, and then it was, I can't remember, about three or four innings in, and I thought, oh, this is quite interesting. I might just watch a couple of innings, and then it turned into one of the greatest sporting events in the history of the universe.
Andy, you know you have a problem with sport. That is like a heroin addict saying, "I'll just have a little taste of heroin."
Just one inning, just one. I mean, one innings for each side. I mean, while I'm here, you know, another innings isn't going to hurt anyone, really. You know, my wife and kids are asleep upstairs. They won't even know about it. I don't need to tell them about it. Give me another inning. Oh, another inning. I just want to see the ball go out the park. Oh, God, I need help.
Well, Andy, I had one of the most horrendous travel days of my life last weekend. I was supposed to fly from Tampa to Durham, North Carolina, a flight which would take about an hour and a half, there or thereabouts. I turned up to the airport only to see that I was flying Delta. Uh-oh, I joked to myself. Hope I make it to my gig in 9 hours' time. Little did I know, Andy, that my plane would be delayed for 2 hours, then 3 hours, then another hour, then cancelled, meaning I had to take two smaller flights, both of which were also delayed, meaning that I got to my gig 2 hours late. And I want to say thank you, Andy, to all the people in Durham who stayed so patiently. And to Delta, I would simply like to say this. F*** you! Go f*** yourself! You f***ing f***s! God! I was having so many violent revenge fantasies during the delay, Andy. I basically spent a day thinking, if I was in a room with the current head of Delta and the current head of Al-Qaeda, and I had a gun with one bullet in it, I'd shoot the head of Al-Qaeda. I'm not a monster. But if I had two bullets, Andy, I would definitely shoot the head of Delta first.
But you not line them up next to each other and...
But that wouldn't have been enough. I also then thought, well, I want to build a time machine so I can go back in time and slap the Wright brothers across the face saying, this is your fault. You started this. You should never have made me feel it was reasonable to get from Florida to North Carolina in less than a day. You! I also think, Andy, in the future, flying Delta should be a common phrase in the English language, meaning doing your job terribly. Oh, I really flew Delta at work today. I got absolutely nothing done. I think I really flew Delta in that exam. There's absolutely no way I passed. And Wayne Rooney steps up to the penalty spot. Oh, my God, he's flown Delta! The ball goes high into the crowd!
Well, of course,
all joking apart, Andy, f*** you, Delta. F*** you.
Well, Delta, of course, you know, in our university days, John, I don't know how your essays were marked at Cambridge, but at Oxford, It's a university that really does rather wish it was still 2,000 years ago. They used to mark it in Greek letters, so Alpha was your sort of best grade. And if you did get a Delta, if you did fly Delta, you would literally be thrown out.
That's fantastic.
So it's good to name yourself after a completely unacceptable grade. So this is for the week beginning Monday, the 31st of October 2011, meaning it is now 494 years to the minute since little Martin Luther posted his famous 95 Theses up, kicking off the Protestant Reformation. The most famous of the little fellow's theses were mostly banging on about the sale of indulgences, meaning you could buy your way out of being punished for doing some sin. In effect, the medieval equivalent of paying a parking fine when you got slapped with a ticket for sinning. Oh, balls. I've got done for adultery. I was only in there 10 minutes. Cripe, so I better pay this off or I'm looking at an eternity in the fiery bowels of hell. Bloody hot at this time of year. But anyway, amongst the lesser known of Luther's theses are these. Thesis 34 stated that if you spend more than 2 hours in the bath, you can understand what frogs are saying when they croak. Thesis 49, any man who claims he can commune with God by belching is a liar and therefore doomed to between 10 and 15% of eternity in hell. Thesis 65, the fact that Jesus rode a donkey when he could easily have ridden a tiger, shows that he was not nearly as much of a show-off as he could have been. And thesis 81, put any woman in a wimple and she instantly becomes Sister Hot. And as always, a section of this audio newspaper is going straight in the bin this week. A computer game section. We review the latest releases on the gaming market, including Monumental the new game. The new adventure game in which, for no reason, you have to slaughter your way through a village, a town and a city, leaving in your wake a trail of blood, pain, grief and despair. Can you do it? Can you prove yourself to be a monumental c***? Also, library manager. Can you keep track of all the books in the library? Order new titles that will appeal to the local readers. Maintain an appropriate level of hush without it falling into stifling formality. Administer fines for late returns. And slaughter the blood-sucking alien arachnids who are trying to take over the Earth. And also, we review Wii Dictator. Using your Nintendo Wii, can you deliver a rabble-rousing speech at a mass rally, lose your temper violently in a cabinet meeting, and give off that unmistakable, I could have you all killed vibe at a military parade?
Top story this week.
Let's stop getting it on.
Oh, baby.
Let's stop getting it on.
According to UN calculations, at some time on Monday, October the 31st, the world's population is estimated to reach 7 billion human beings. We did it! We did it, Andy! As a species, we banged each other towards the precipice of oblivion. The dinosaurs might have gone out with an asteroid. We went out banging. And good luck explaining that to your offspring, future inhabitants of Earth. We did it! They said it couldn't be done. They said it shouldn't be done. But we showed them. Sure. Sure, we had help. Andy, when we collect our award for most people on the planet, there's going to be so many people to thank. First, we really have to thank God for making us all so bangable. Secondly, we must thank the Catholic Church for inexplicably continuing to hold a prehistoric attitude towards contraception. Thanks, Pope. This 7 billionth baby is for you and your lack of conscience. And finally, we have to thank... No, please don't play us off! Please don't play us off! Finally, we have to thank our collective refusal to fully confront this looming overpopulation catastrophe. We're king of the world!
Yeah, well, I mean, it might not stop here, John. I mean, this is not... We mustn't see this as having achieved everything we can achieve in terms of breeding with no real eye on the long term. I mean, they do predict that population will reach at least 10 billion by the end of the century. Or if people really cannot stop banging each other, it could be as much as 15 billion. Now, of course, no, I'm going to take the optimistic view on this. I'm going to say, well, there are now 7 billion... potential buglers out there, John. That's
true.
That's more and more buglers. Mate, just more potential friends to meet. A pessimist, of course, would say, oh, shit, that's more potential people trying to become my friend. What do they want? What do they f***ing want from me?
But what better day, Andy, than Halloween to reach this milestone? It's our last chance to reverse the trend by trying to scare the record-breaking baby back in. The child will be born into a world dressed up as witches and goblins, or sexy witches and sexy goblins. And if it doesn't immediately start trying to climb frantically back up the umbilical cord, then we are, in fact, in serious trouble. But who's the 7 billionth baby going to be? I'm sure there's going to be a bit of a race to either squeeze out or hold in babies so that you can have a historic child rather than just a boring baby with no numerical gimmick to them whatsoever. Also, it could make for some last-second drama, too. You might think you're going to be the 7 billionth baby. Then someone unhelpfully dies the split second before you're born. You drop down a notch, only for your title to be taken by the screaming little shit who pops out in the bed next to you, flipping the bird straight into your face and saying, "Ah, I'm the 7 billionth, you're not. Ah!"
Well, it is a big problem, John, there's some debate about exactly how big it is. People have, after all, been predicting Malthusian catastrophes ever since... Well, pretty much ever since Malthus woke up one morning and fancied having his name turned into an adjective. And it's bad news for us in the West if Africa gets so full of people that they have to start eating their own food instead of exporting it to us at knockdown prices. I mean, that is the real concern.
That is, God, that's chilly to think that could ever happen, Andy.
Yeah. I mean, if Africa's population increases twofold, what are we going to do, John? I mean, you cannot live on television alone.
Yeah, well, just think of it as our glass being completely full and theirs being completely empty.
Okay. All right, I find that reassuring, John.
Yeah, that's better.
And also, I mean, they should be more grateful, John. If we had not discovered Africa in the first place, these people wouldn't even have anywhere to live, and bang.
That is a strong point. Yeah. That's a strong, strong point. But how do we celebrate this, Andy? Perhaps the birth, this monument to overpopulation, will be celebrated like the millionth customer in a supermarket. Balloons will drop from the sky, and parents will be allowed to have a 2-minute free sweep around a local grocery store to grab things from the now empty shelves. But the UN predictions for the future, as you mentioned, are actually much, much worse than this. We may end up looking back at this time of a population of 7 billion as being a golden age of global spaciousness. Because the numbers suggest that by the end of this century, the world's population could be over 15 billion. It will nearly double in just 100 years. And it's pretty clear what the problem is here.
That's
Andy.
Bad maths, John. That is more than double.
That's right. It will nearly double, then it will do a bit more than that. In just 100 years, Andy, that's maths.
Yeah.
That's mathematics.
I know.
But it is pretty clear what the problem is here. The upcoming century is just going to be way too sexy. If we don't do something, by the year 2100, around 35% of the world's population will be directly related to Silvio Berlusconi. That can't happen. We can't have millions of little Silvios running around dry-humping table legs. You can't run a planet like that.
Really? That sounds like it might be a solution, to be honest. I think we just need sexier table legs. If we can make table legs sexier than women, then that could...
God, you might be right.
Yeah. I think we might have stumbled upon a solution here. What we need, what this world needs, is not greater equality. It's not cures for curable diseases. It's not water and education for the poor in the developing world. What it needs is erotic furniture. Distractingly erotic furniture.
Well, I think it's pretty clear. We all need to cut back on sexiness. Now, you and I have been inadvertently doing this for years. But it's not enough now, Andy.
Right.
The slap base should be banned, there should be prohibition on scented candles, and all underwear sold from now on must carry the face of the recently murdered Colonel Gaddafi. There was nothing hot about that image, Andy, and that really might just be the photographic cold shower that the world needs for the next century.
Yep. He did have a bad week, to be fair. He was not looking at his best. So what are the solutions to this? Well, there's education, women's rights, economic development, but all these quite expensive. And but looking at the economics of it, John, the inequality does rather leap out at you. The world's richest 11 million people, known as high net worth individuals.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's a nice little term, that, isn't it? Something to aspire to. could, by my calculations, afford between them to give $5,000 in cash in a brown envelope, no questions asked, to every single one of the 7 billion people on Earth. And they would still have $700,000 each left over. Now, admittedly, $700,000 doesn't get you that far these days if you're rich, whilst $5,000 does get you quite far if you're poor. So maybe some deal can be reached whereby the rich donors are allowed to kill and eat one of the poor they funded per month. I mean, you've got to hack out the small print, really. But the point is, I want my $5,000, John, when the Smurfs royalty check comes through.
Summit News now, And while there was an emergency EU summit this week, obviously there have been summits before, but never called this way, Andy. They projected the EU symbol into the sky above Brussels, and all around the continent, these special rings on all the leaders of the EU member states started to glow. Chancellor Merkel of Germany jumped straight out of a window onto a specially trained eagle and flew to Belgium. Nicolas Sarkozy started frantically tunnelling into the floor, burrowing his way east with his secret powers of the mole. David Cameron closed his eyes and disappeared in front of his cabinet, only to re-emerge at Heathrow Airport, teleporting himself there just in time to catch the next flight to the continent. And Silvio Berlusconi looked at the three strippers in front of him, looked at his glowing ring, looked at the three strippers again, looked back at the ring, and threw the ring out of the window. They were gathering to discuss what to do about the looming EU financial meltdown, and they were set for days of talks, even continuing discussions apparently over dinner. And I'm guessing, Andy, they were served standard Belgian fare, really, for a starter. They probably had moule frites, mussels and fries, washed down with a classic Belgian beer. For a main course, ooh, I don't know, well, if you were in Belgium, you'd probably have to have Vlaams stoofkarbonaden, a Flemish beef stew. And for dessert, well, I don't know, Andy, you're probably quite full at that point. Why not have a selection tray of pralines, the famous Belgian truffle chocolate? Oh, hold on, they wouldn't be eating any of that, Andy. They'd be served wall-to-wall waffles. Because that's all they eat there.
And that's why their economy is doing better than anyone else's. No government and waffles, but especially waffles. When are we going to learn? That's what they should do with Greece. They should just kidnap their government and airdrop waffles over them. That is all that's right. Needed.
Put that Dolmades down, Spiros, and get this waffle in your chops.
Maybe that so they wouldn't have to have any more general strikes, the one that they're on at the moment, to add to the 2000-year one that they were already on before it started. So, very, very difficult problem, John, clearly, and they've ended up they've ended up throwing money at the problem, a lot of money, and then some. There wasn't unanimity on it, and maybe that's Sparta the problem. When you look at the sums involved, you think, Corinth, that case. Maybe the whole continent needs to take a look at what it's done to itself. People got awfully wound up. There's a lot of knickers in a twist. What went on behind the scenes? Our gossip was that the Germans played hardball. Some dangerous things were said. People were indiscreet. Maybe they should have been less bossy in the first place. I seen it coming. I like that one. Do you like that one? My seen it.
I think anger towards Greece is already at fever pitch, Andy. Don't make it worse.
There were marathon talks. They're all there. There was Berlusconi, Angela Merkel. I'm surprised he didn't pat her ass. Cost. There's a lot of prejudice to overcome and myths to dispel or pernicious rumours become accepted as fact. Did you get that, Buglis? Peloponnese? It all went down right to the last minute. There was a lot of relief when the deal was done. People gasped, "Corfu! How did they manage that? They'll feel better now. It could have been a disaster. Absolutely calamitous." There's not a great deal to celebrate, though. I doubt there will be a tick-a-tape parade.
Oh, that's a high degree of difficulty, that one.
But the system needs to be cleaned up, John. We need to rinse it from top to bottom. That's a little slightly niche archaeological site. Was it too much money? Are they over-egging a pudding? It's a little island joke for you. You be a bit more careful next time. Two island jokes in a row. I had to think about it all. I didn't want anyone to talk. I didn't want to talk to anyone about it. So I went to the CAF alone. Aunt CAF. And I thought, what a pile of shit. While we were doing that, I had to take a little break to a little bit of factual research. And Chris has written down a pun he thought I was going to tell in that run. Now, Chris, what was it?
Roads to hell.
All right. Well, I did. I thought roads was a bit too easy. Wasn't enough of a challenge.
I'm sorry, that's never stopped you before.
Yeah, that's right. I think you're giving yourself way too much credit there, Andy.
I didn't do roads. I didn't.
Andy, did you write that during the later innings of the baseball game last night, where you were completely delirious?
You might think that, John, but that is not true. I wrote it on the tube train on the way here. But I believe the after effects of having stayed up until 6 o'clock in the morning watching baseball may have influenced it.
Yes, I think so.
Other news now, the celebrity international celebrity chef, Sklooten Malvane, has defended using a fast-acting poison in one of his dishes. At his famous New York brasserie, Belchissima, after a non-life-endangering starter of regretful wood pigeon hand-haunted in a memory of asparagus wrongdoings, bondage to a bed of covertly assassinated scallops and hard-punched potato faces, Malvane served his customers a plate of penisless chicken supremes in a potassium cyanide jus. The dish, described as, quote, initially delicious, succulent and Moorish, but subsequently rapidly fatal, is then swiftly followed by a palate-cleansing kaffir-lime red peppercorn and hydroxycobalamin granita, providing a refreshing and life-saving antidote for the desperately gasping diners. Most make a full recovery in time for the main course, a high-speed car crash tenderised paragon of overbearingly mothered beef groin with a Hasidic reductio, gruffly manhandled chanterelle mushroom willies and a pert bouncer of cabbage tits. Some have described the experience as, quote, an interesting twist on the traditional dining experience. Others say that, quote, almost dying early in the meal makes you really appreciate being alive for the cheese board. Although some have complained that the cyanide left them with irreparable physical and psychological damage that no amount of doggy bags to take home and complimentary napkins can compensate for. Malvane's other restaurants include Testiculate in Chicago, La Jolie Fornicateurs in Paris, The Screaming Shithead in Buenos Aires, and London's new controversial abusively staffed Mexican Antarctic Fusion in Salta Bistro. These, of course, all run alongside his famous San Francisco delicatessen and sex shop, Gherkins and Merkins. Malvane commented, "Food is about more than flavours and textures. It's about emotions and passions. And when do people get more emotional than when they think they're about to die, other than when they're rescued from the precipice of oblivion? Now put your hands in the air and stop breathing or I'll shoot you. Just kidding, have a pickled onion. Tastes pretty sweet, eh? Die, motherfucker, die! Ah, got you again. Spam fritter, don't mind if you do."
You've been very rude today, Andy.
Sorry, yeah. Chris.
Very rude.
You're overtired, Andy.
All right.
And you're showing off.
18 f**ks and 3 f**ks already.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And now for this week's Bugle feature section, it's what you've all been waiting for. I hope those words don't ring too hollow. It is the latest instalment of the...
Whoa, Andy. Just be clear before you start this. What are we getting into? Is this the latest and last? Finish this, Andy. Finish it.
Well, what do you mean? I mean, it's not really up to me, John. It's up to what John Grisham wrote all those years ago.
Just read, Andy, but I do hope at the end you're inflecting down and saying the end.
I do that at my gigs, to be fair. Here it is. The Congressman's Penis.
Last time in The Congressman's Penis... Mickey Stantanio, PI, was on the trail of a missing congressman's penis. He had Senator Paul Crutchett in a headlock and was asking him to spill the beans. Mickey Stantanio, the man who never prided himself on his ability to slice bread evenly, but who was nonetheless quite good at that underrated skill, stared Senator Paul Crutchett in the eyes. He thought to himself, I need a wee-wee. But before that, Eva Marie Saint in North by Northwest. Hot diggity dang. No, focus, Mickey. Focus. You gotta find that penis before it ends up in the wrong hands. Or in Mexico. Or in an extremely distressing and quite disappointing foot-long hot dog. But at that moment, he felt something cudgel him in the back of the head. It was a cudgel. Mickey Stantanio woke up. His hands were tied behind his back. He was blindfolded. And his mouth was taped over. Bollocks, he said. Although it sounded like... He pulled at the restraints around his oh-so-American wrists. They came loose and fell to the floor. No use, he mumbled disconsolately. Hang on reflection, some use. Those restraints came off quite easily, almost like spaghetti. He shook the blindfold from his face. It was a large slice of Taleggio cheese. He bit into the tape around his lower face. It melted into his mouth. Mmm, Parma ham. Nice touch. Oh, that's the good stuff, too, not some supermarket muck. Oh, so tasty, it's become kosher. Oh, yeah. Why? But this has all the hallmarks of an Italian restaurant. Mickey ate through the rest of the ties that bound him.
including a couple of unaccountable mozzarella testicles, muttered, "What's a guy got to do to get a glass of Barolo around here?" He sneaked up to the door. "I wonder what Italian restaurant this could be." Just then, a familiar voice boomed around the corner. "Mickey boy, nice to see you. Uncle Vittorio, but, have you got the congressman's penis?" "What, mate?" said Uncle Vittorio. "No penis round here other than the regulation ones. All above board, I assure you. Just like everything else in this operation. Right, Franco, Giuseppe, Roberto, Salvatore, Gianluca and Walter?" "White boss," said the man. "Uncle Vittorio," said Mickey. "Why are you implying members of the 1990 Italian Football World Cup squad? And if you don't have the congressman's penis, why didn't you kidnap me like that?" "Well, I just hadn't seen you in a while and you weren't answering your calls." "Man, you were seriously annoying sometimes, Uncle Vittorio. You've just wasted a whole f***ing chapter of this book. And you might have let the congressman's penis escape the country. If we're not careful, there could be an American congressman's penis out there in whatever the rest of the world is called collectively. Do you realise the instability that could cause? That could spark a third world war." "Third," said Uncle Vittorio. "Don't you mean second?" "No, Uncle Vittorio, I mean third. You're going to have to stop in describing your last years in the late 30s and early 40s as one hell of a fancy dress party." "Potato, potato. You were Benito Mussolini's personal assistant." "Officially, I still am," said Uncle Vittorio. "He never actually fired me." "It's pretty fucking hard to fire someone when you're hanging upside down from a meat hook," said Mickey. "That's hearsay," said Uncle Vittorio. "There's photographic and video evidence." "Potato, potato. Quit saying that. Oh, it's just a new dish we've started selling. We just had an order from table 14. "Oh, shit it," said Mickey. "This trailer's gone cold. This was supposed to be the last chapter, Uncle Vittorio." "Oh,
no,
well, it's
no.
very nice to see you too, Mickey. Any chance of some tiramisu before I go? Go f*** yourself." Bit of a cliffhanger.
Oh, Andy.
What?
I mean, how many more installments are there going to be? Just give me a number.
Well, I keep receiving the leaked novel chapter by chapter, so
okay,
it's really very
okay,
much out
fine,
of my control.
Fine,
but we know
fine.
Grisham in his early days, he kind of wrote in a kind of stream of consciousness way, he just got it all down on paper. Mm-hmm. And the thing with this, it hadn't been through his rigorous editing process. This pretty much would be just the first page, but
I think you're a sadist.
Well, potato, potato.
Your emails now, and well, we've had a number of emails commemorating the passing of the late anti-great Colonel Gaddafi.
he had an even worse day than. Than we reported last week.
He had a terrible day. He had a terrible day, yeah.
Pretty
reportedly
much.
An absolutely abysmal day.
Yeah, I mean, you do not, you know, if you're going to be brutally killed, you don't want to be slightly kebabbed first.
This first one is from Laura Dix, who says, "Dear Andy, Chris and John, in alphabetical order, sometimes it's good just to keep things simple." Good point. "First Mubarak, then Bin Laden, now Gaddafi. Does the Bugle have the power to overthrow or kill crazies? Can this power be used for good? If Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, Kim Jong-il, Silvio Berlusconi or any of your other favourite crazies go down within the next few months, we will surely know that the Bugle has powers beyond what we had previously imagined. There can be no other explanation. As well as being able to separate teen pop sensations from their amusingly named partners, the Bugle has the power to kill, and not just through puns."
Oh, that was the prophetic, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. "The only way we'll know for certain is if you pick your favourite crazy, give them the spotlight for a bit and see what happens. We need to know. Use your powers wisely. Laurie Dix." So...
Well... We had that Ahmadinejad special, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, my instinct is
He's
to say, no, of course, we've got nothing to do with all that, but you know, when she puts it like that, it's hard to argue.
Yeah, I mean,
with.
You just cannot argue. You cannot fight the evidence, John. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are clearly transforming the world into a freer and more democratic place, you know, compared with what it was like just 4 years ago when we started.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine what it would be like after we've done the next 100 years of the Bugle. It's going to be just like one giant utopia with 15 billion people in it. All doing nothing but vote on stuff.
A buglocracy.
Yep.
Well, maybe what we need to do, I guess, is do a kind of controlled experiment. Maybe lay off one specific dictator for a year and see,
what, see if they become incredibly powerful.
Yeah. So maybe we should just leave. Maybe if we just don't mention Assad in Syria at all.
Yeah.
And see if that works. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty cruel, Andy, to use the people of Syria as your guinea pigs.
Well, that's what the international community has been doing anyway. And this email, on a similar subject, comes in on the subject late entrant. Dear Oily and Schmaltz, now that Mr. Gaddafi has passed...
That's a
classic.
That's the name of Andy Mai's new deli.
It's just right next door to Jonas Schimmel's Knishery. Now that Mr. Gaddafi has passed, is he eligible for the Hotties from History competition?
Ooh.
Well, I would say that is probably too soon. I know the competition concluded some years ago, but was it officially? I think we did officially conclude it.
I think we ended it, Andy. Joanna the Mad got the title for the ladies, and I forget who got the title for the gents.
Yeah. Was it Bismarck? I don't remember.
Before my time.
Could have been.
He did look pretty hot on that massive statue of his. Anyway, I know the competition concluded some years ago, says Andrew B. in Los Angeles, but please be kind. He's only just been shot. I believe his qualifications speak for themselves. I guess he had a certain rugged... Well, he kind of ended up looking a bit like Rambo. Gone a bit wrong.
Having gone through his kind of Michael Jackson chic phase.
Yeah. So I would probably say he's not eligible for at least... I don't know, what's the cooling off period? What do they have for saints in the Catholic Church? It's probably got to be about the same, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely a couple of years before he can apply.
So he needs to be... how does the process go before he's officially canonised?
Is there some kind of beatification intermediary level? Is this what he's saying?
He's got to be beatified. He needed, actually, to be fair, he did need a lot of beatification by the time they'd finished with him. Sport now, and what a game, John! What a game! I know you said it at the start of the programme, but that remains true.
What a game.
Now, I know not all buglers are baseball fans or sports fans, or even believe in the right of America to exist as a country and invent its own sports. But what a game, John. What a game. It had absolutely everything. It had some amazingly brilliant play, and like so many great sporting events... It had some unfeasibly shit play as well, and it's that cocktail of bloopers and brilliance that makes a game really special. Came to the bottom of the ninth innings, the Cardinals were two runs down, and local lad David Freese, who came from just outside St. Louis, is it St. Louis or St. Louis?
St. Louis.
St. Louis. You called it St. Louis earlier on.
Did I?
It's just over familiar. You confused me. I was pretty sure it was St. Louis. Anyway, St. Louis were two runs down, and they had two men on base. This probably means absolutely... The thing with baseball is, if you don't know anything about baseball, the language used makes absolutely no sense at all.
Well, that's your problem. If you don't know anything about baseball, that's your problem. That's easily corrected, and that's simply by becoming a fan of baseball.
To summarise it, they were about to lose, and... Texas needed one more strike, one more pitch that the batter swung at and missed, or that went in the strike zone without him hitting it. There you go. That's basically summed it up. Oh, God, I was up too late last night. Anyway, the point is... Chris, you might have to trim some of this back.
Looking forward to that, yeah.
So, let's start again. Or do you want to explain it, John? You'd probably do it more succinctly.
No, Andy, you're doing a tremendous job. Keep going.
So, Texas having... So St. Louis with two runs down. Freese, the local boy, comes in and he's one failure away from losing the entire World Series. And he takes a swing and he melts it out towards the fence. And it was 2 feet above the outfielder's glove for the catch that would have lost the game. And it was 2 feet below the top of the wall for the home run that would have won it. Instead, he drove in the two equalising runs. And it went to extra innings. And then Texas went two runs up again, and St. Louis again got to the stage where they were one pitch away from losing. Texas one pitch away from winning, and this time Lance Berkman had a successful hit and drove in the equalising run. It went to another extra innings, and then Freese came back out and hit a walk-off game-winning home run to win it 10-9. And the whole of Missouri went noisily berserk, in the words of Richie Beno from the 1981 Ashes. And it was, I mean, that only tells a part of the story. It was a phenomenal game, a kind of parade of potential heroes coming and going, seeing their shot at baseball immortality rise and vanish again. It was absolutely, completely compelling. The game had a lot of things that had never happened in baseball before, and certainly in World Series matches. It had more firsts than a 1950s KGB shopping list of homosexual Oxbridge graduates. And I found myself in my living room at about 5:30 a.m. jumping off my sofa and shouting, "Come on, Lance," as Berkman hit in the 10th innings. Thinking, what am I doing with my life? I've got a wife and two kids upstairs. So you had to feel a bit sorry for Texas, John. They seem like a decent bunch of guys, and their coach, Ron Washington, comes across the kind of guy you'd like to hire in as an emergency uncle for family occasions when your real uncle can't make it. Mm-hmm. And you think, well, that was really unfortunate. They came so close to it and just slightly cracked when it was most needed to stay together. And then you think that's really sad for them. And then you remember George W. Bush is a Texas Rangers fan and former owner. And you picture the look on his face and you think, well, this doesn't quite make up for the 2000 election, but still, better than nothing.
In other sports news, it's a very exciting moment as we are about to officially induct another sportsman into the Bugle Crazy Sportsman Hall of Fame. We've had so many athletes from American sports that have raised the bar for batshittery. And now, finally, Europe has stepped up to the crazy plate with one of its own. Step forward, Mario Balotelli, striker for Manchester City in Italy and certifiable nutjob. Take a bow, you magnificent lunatic. He's been making a pretty good case for his inclusion over the last few months, but his application became unrefusable this week when he almost burnt his house down in the early hours of Saturday morning, just 36 hours ahead of his team's biggest game of the season against Manchester United, by setting off fireworks inside his bathroom. Apparently, he was trying to fire them out of the window. Brilliant, Andy. Just brilliant. Also, this happened a mere 2 days after saying his bad boy days were behind him. And that's still true. His bad boy days are behind him, Andy. It's just that his incredible boy days are here.
And the really exciting thing about Balotelli as a member of the Hall of Crazy is he's only 21.
That's the thing.
He's got so much.
Think of what he can do.
I mean, he can do some amazing things for crazy sport.
You might argue that it's a little too early in his career to already make the Crazy Hall of Fame, but don't be so quick to judge. Wait for the facts. Let's just look at his numbers. Here are some highlights of what Super Mario has been up to. Just 2 weeks into his Manchester City career, he crashed his car near the training ground. He was breathalyzed and searched, during which time they found that he had £5,000 in cash in his back pocket. When policemen asked him why this was the case, Balotelli replied to them in broken English, "Because I am rich." Good start.
But also, just recently, he was asked for an autograph at the Manchester City training ground by a schoolboy, and he asked him why he wasn't at school. And the boy said he'd been bullied, and Balotelli then drove the boy and his mother to their school and confronted the bully.
Phenomenal.
And after the firework incident, he's now taken part in a firework safety campaign as well.
Then, in October last year, Mario and his 17-year-old brother were arrested strolling through the grounds of a women's prison in Brescia near Milan. Apparently, he told police that curiosity had got the better of him, and he, I quote, just fancied having a look. That's right, Mario Balotelli broke into a prison. Still not convinced? Well, how about my favourite? The story claiming that Mario's mother, after consultations with his new cleaner, sent Mario off to the local John Lewis store to buy a list of supplies, including an iron, a mop and a vacuum cleaner. A few hours later, Mario's car came home. It pulled up with a van behind it, which promptly unloaded a giant trampoline, two Vespa scooters, and no cleaning products whatsoever.
Well, to be fair, you could
use... He's sensational!
You could use the scooters as an iron, and when you've got a giant trampoline, who gives a shit if your carpets are clean?
Even last weekend, after scoring against Manchester United, he pulled up his shirt to reveal a T-shirt underneath reading, "Why always me?" He's not just an athlete, Andy. He's a philosopher. He's getting our attention with goals and then pondering profound questions for us to answer. Don't be surprised if next time he scores, he pulls up a T-shirt revealing, are we not just dust? Dust in the wind of history. And we'll all stop and say, you're absolutely right, Mario. You've nailed it again, before resuming jumping up and down at his magnificent scissor kick.
He's been stopped by police brandishing a toy gun in public, fined for driving around at 1:30 in the morning tooting his car horn in a built-up area. When he was playing for Inter Milan, after being dropped, he went on a TV show wearing the shirt of their arch-rivals AC Milan, which is a bit like a defeated Republican presidential candidate turning up to the Republican convention dressed as Lenin and eating cabbage soup. He's recently given £1,000 in cash to a tramp in Manchester. He had his Maserati bashed up outside a lap dancing club by bouncers because he'd annoyed them so much. He's thrown darts at youth team players at the Manchester City training ground. And apparently had his car confiscated 25 times in less than a year and a half since moving to Manchester. It's extraordinary. He's got a fascinating life. He had to deal with large-scale racism in his personal life and throughout his football career in Italy, where they generally view with some suspicion, Italian football fans, anyone who cannot prove that their great-grandfather fought with Julius Caesar in the 7th Legion in Gaul. He's helped build a new school in Sudan. And there just seems no end to what he could do. And now, I think we need to put this in context. For a start, he's regarded as one of the most talented young footballers in the world. His former manager, Jose Mourinho, said he trains at 25%. If he trained at 50%, he'd be one of the best players in the world. And this is the most important piece of context this year, John. In April of this year, Balotelli was linked with a move to AC Milan, but the owner of AC Milan said that Balotelli's behaviour would be not suitable for the club. Now, you might think that doesn't seem so unreasonable. Presumably the owner merely wants to maintain standards at his club, because footballers are now often seen as role models in the modern world, and the owner's entirely within his rights to expect his players to live up to that. And you'll be justified in thinking that, until you hear the name of the owner of AC Milan saying that Balotelli's behaviour was not up to scratch. And that name is Silvio Berlusconi.
It's true. Well, welcome to the Crazy Hall of Fame, Mario Balotelli. Richly deserved. You complete crazy bastard.
21 years old, John.
21, he could have another, so talented.
He could have another 15 years at the top level of crazy
so
sports.
So talented.
He's probably going to launch a nuclear strike at some point just to pass the time. I wouldn't be surprised if like, he's supposed to be playing in the World Cup final for Italy and he turns up on the moon in a rocket. So that's it for this week's Bugle. Thanks for listening, Buglers. We'll be back with Bugle 171 next week. Until then, try not to die.
Bye!
Bye!